you for standing by. All participants are in a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session of today's call. At that time, you can press star 1 on your phone, unmute, and record your name. Your name is required to introduce the question. Today's call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. My pleasure to turn the call over to John Bateman. You may now begin, sir.
Thanks, Michelle. Good morning, and thank you for joining this monthly climate update call, part of the suite of climate services that NOAA provides to government, business, academia, and the public to support informed decision-making. I'm John Bateman with NOAA Communications, and I'll be facilitating the call today. If you have any additional questions after the conclusion of today's call, my colleague John Wesley and I can both be reached by email at, and I will spell it, nesdis.pa@noaa.gov. Today's update will feature three short presentations followed by an operator-assisted question and answer session. A copy of the presentation our speakers will follow can be downloaded from the link in the media advisory. If you don't have that link, I will spell it for you now so you can download the presentation. It is https://www.ncdc.noaa.gov/SOTC/BRIEFINGS. And with that, I will introduce our speakers. Our first presenter is Ira Sanchez Lugo, a climatologist with NOAA's National Centers for Environmental Information, who will provide a summary of the June 2021 U.S. and Global Climate Report, as well as the latest drought monitor update. Our second presenter is Sandra Rain, a regional climatologist from NOAA's Southeast Regional Climate Center, who will review the history and impacts of Tropical Storm Claudette, which brought flooding rain and spawned tornadoes across the South last month. And our third presenter is Dan Collins, a meteorologist at NOAA's Climate Prediction Center, who will provide the latest El Niño-La Niña update, as well as the U.S. temperature, precipitation, and drought outlook for the months of August, September, and October. Our first speaker will be Ira from NOAA.
Thank you, John, and thanks to everyone who joined in. So I'm going to go ahead and start on slide 2. So for the globe, the June 2021 global surface temperature was 0.88 degrees Celsius or 1.58 degrees Fahrenheit above the 20th century average. And this value was the fifth highest for June since global records began in 1880. As you can see from the map on the left, much of the globe experienced warmer than average conditions during the month, with the most notable warm temperatures of at least 3 degrees Celsius or 5.4 degrees Fahrenheit above average across large portions of the Northern Hemisphere land, specifically across parts of North America, Europe, and Western and Eastern Russia. There were several locations across the North Pacific Ocean and the Atlantic Ocean that had temperatures that were at least 2 degrees Celsius or 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit above average. From the map on the right, you can see that record warm June temperatures were observed across parts of Africa, Southern Asia, North America, and small areas across the Atlantic Ocean. We did see locations that have near to cooler than average conditions during the month. However, no land or ocean area experienced a record cold June temperature. So the unusually warm temperatures that we saw across the land surfaces during the month resulted in the warmest global June land-only surface temperature at 1.42 degrees Celsius or 2.56 degrees Fahrenheit above average. And this surpassed the previous record that was set in 2019. So the unusually warm global land-only surface temperature was mainly driven by the very warm Northern Hemisphere land, which also had its highest June temperature at 1.69 degrees Celsius or 3.04 degrees Fahrenheit above average. So the northern hemisphere land surpassed the previous June temperature that was set in 2012. Looking at some continental information, North America had its highest June temperature on record, surpassing the previous record that was set in 2016 by at least 0.30 degrees Celsius or 0.54 degrees Fahrenheit. We've seen in the news that during the last week of June, an extreme and unprecedented heat wave affected much of the northwestern contiguous U.S. and western Canada, with maximum temperatures surpassing 100 degrees Fahrenheit, which is not typical for the region. And this was mainly due to an amplified ridge of high pressure across the Pacific Northwest, which contributed to the record warm temperatures that we saw in the area. And of note, according to the World Meteorological Organization, Lytton, British Columbia in Canada set a new national maximum temperature record for three consecutive days, with the latest record of 49.6 degrees Celsius or 121.3 degrees Fahrenheit set on June 29. So moving towards now, also the intense heat that we saw during that time was blamed for over 100 reported deaths and hospitalizations across parts of the Northwest, contiguous U.S., as well as Western Canada. There were deterioration, the heat and the dry conditions contributed to deterioration of drought, and we also saw some impacts on heat. And this is all, impacts on crops. And this is all preliminary because it's going to take some time for us to fully understand the full impacts of heat. So this is preliminary information. Looking now at Africa, Africa also had its warmest June on record, and the temperature that we saw in June 2021 surpassed the previous record that was set only last year. So the three warmest Junes for Africa have all occurred in the last 3 years. Looking at Europe, Europe also had warmer than average conditions during the month, and it had its second warmest June on record, only behind 2019. There were several countries across Europe that did have a top five warm June. Asia's June 2021 temperature tied with 2010 as the second highest June on record behind 2012. Moving now to slide number three to look at the year-to-date for the globe. The January through June 2021 global surface temperature was the eighth highest such period on record, with a temperature departure of 0.79 degrees Celsius or 1.42 degrees Fahrenheit above average. So looking at the map, the first half of the year was characterized by warmer than average conditions across much of the globe, with record warm January through June temperatures across parts of the southern half of Asia, northern Africa, and across parts of the Pacific and the Atlantic Oceans. Near to cooler than average conditions were present across parts of the central and eastern tropical Pacific Ocean, as well as the southeastern Pacific Ocean, the northern Atlantic Ocean, and parts of northern Asia, as well as India and Australia. However, no land or ocean areas had a record cold January through June temperature. Looking ahead, we've stated since the beginning of the year that 2021 is very, very likely to rank among the 10 warmest years on record. With data through June 2021, we estimate that there's a 95% confidence level that it will fall between 6th and 7th warmest year. Moving now to slide number four to take a look, closer look at the climate conditions across the U.S. This was a very warm June for the U.S. The June 2021 temperature was actually the highest for June in the nation's 127-year record, with a temperature that was 4.2 degrees Fahrenheit above average. And this value bested the previous record that was set in 2016 by a wide margin of 0.9 degrees Fahrenheit, almost a whole degree. We saw that several states across the West and the Northeast had a record warm or near record warm June temperature. However, no state had a statewide average temperature that ranked below average for the month. Again, there were several, the heat wave prompted a lot of maximum temperatures across the region. I'm just going to highlight one in particular. There was and I'm not sure if I'm going to pronounce this correctly, but Tillayut in Washington that had a maximum temperature of 110 degrees Fahrenheit, and that temperature surpassed the previous record that was that took place on August 9, 1981, by 11 degrees Fahrenheit. And then there was another potential record, and I say potential because it has to go get verified, at the Dales Airport, Washington, that had a temperature of 118 degrees Fahrenheit that was set on June 28th. And if confirmed, this would tie for the warmest temperature on record for the state of Washington. Looking now at precipitation for the month, the nation had a total of 2.93 inches for June, which is average. However, when you look at the map, there were regional differences. We saw above average precipitation across parts of the Deep South, the Midwest, the Great Lakes, Gulf Coast, and the Southeast. I'm going to briefly mention Tropical Storm Claudette, which made landfall in Louisiana on June 19th, and it brought torrential rains, floods, and spawned a few tornadoes in the southeastern region. So Claudette contributed to the wetter-than-average conditions that we saw across the southeastern contiguous U.S. In terms of drier-than-average conditions, we saw that much of the West, Northern Rockies, Northern and Central Plains, as well as the Northeast, did have drier-than-average conditions for the month. Moving now to slide number five, I'm going to briefly mention the billion-dollar weather and climate disasters because it gets updated every quarter. And so we recently updated it, and it identified $8 billion in weather climate disasters during the first half of the year. And you can see which these were by looking at the map. I wanted to highlight that the most costly U.S. event so far in 2021 was the February winter storm that impacted Texas and parts of Oklahoma, with total direct losses of approximately $20 billion U.S. dollars. So this is now the most costly U.S. winter storm event on record and surpassing the previous event, which was the superstorm of 1993. If you like more information, additional information, you can access the website, the link that I have down below. Now looking at my last slide, looking at the U.S. drought, so the map that you see here was released this morning. So the drought footprint for the contiguous U.S. As of today was 46% of the U.S. was in some type of drought. And when you compare that with the drought footprint of about a month ago, it's about the same. It didn't change much. However, there were some regional differences. There were some locations that did see deterioration and some areas that did see some improvement. So much of the West, the Northern Plains, and parts of the Midwest, Great Lakes region, as well as the Northeast, are currently in drought. And I wanted to highlight the West because close to 95% of the West is in either moderate to exceptional drought, with about 63% of it being in extreme to exceptional drought. And that's, those are like the two worst drought categories. So above normal temperatures and drier than average conditions helped deteriorate drought conditions across the Pacific Northwest, the Northern Great Basin, the Northern Rockies, as well as parts of the Northern High Plains. However, we did see some drought improvements across parts of the Southwest that is associated to the heavy rain associated with the Southwest monsoon. And also Tropical Storm Elsa, which made landfall in Florida and moved up to the East Coast, that brought heavy rainfall to some regions, leaving a large swath of at least 2 inches of rain across the region. So that helped improve some drought conditions in the area. So that is all that I have today. So I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Sandra.
Thank you, Ira. Okay, as mentioned earlier, I will be discussing the history and impacts of Tropical Storm Claudette. So if you all will please refer to slide 7 of the presentation. Claudette originated from a broad trough of low pressure over the Bay of Campeche on June 12th and slowly moved around the region for the next few days. The National Hurricane Center began issuing advisories on potential Tropical Cyclone 3 late on June 17th due to its imminent threat to land. As it moved northward through the Gulf of Mexico, it slowly intensified. However, it still remained disorganized. Claudette became a tropical storm after it made landfall in Louisiana on June 19th. Although rare, this isn't the first time a named storm has formed over land. Just last year, a tropical depression became Tropical Storm Sally while crossing over the Florida Everglades. And in 2016, a tropical depression became Tropical Storm Julia while it was located over the city of Jacksonville, Florida. Moving on to slide 8, Claudette produced storm surge of 1 to 4 feet along the Gulf Coast, including a storm surge measure of 4.43 feet above ground level in Waveland, Mississippi. Wind gusts of 40 to 60 miles per hour were reported along the Gulf Coast from Louisiana to the panhandle of Florida. As the system tracked northeastward through the southeast region, it was downgraded to a tropical depression, but re-strengthened into a tropical storm again on June 21st over North Carolina. Based on an observation of a brief period of sustained tropical storm force winds at a NOAA buoy just off the coast of North Carolina. The highest wind gusts, however, were from a line of thunderstorms that developed just east of the center of Claudette. Pensacola International Airport measured a wind gust of 81 miles per hour from these storms. That's not the only severe weather that occurred with Tropical Storm Claudette. If you will refer to slide 9, Claudette spawned a few tornadoes. The strongest tornado was rated EF2 with winds of 127 miles per hour and caused extreme damage along a 22-mile path from East Bruton to Castleberry in Escambia County, Alabama. This tornado damaged or destroyed about 70 buildings, including damaging the roof of W.S. Neal High School. About 20 people were injured with this tornado, including one person who was thrown from their home when it was destroyed. Another tornado, rated EF0, with winds reaching 85 miles per hour, occurred in Mobile County, Alabama. This brief tornado damaged the poles and railings of Cedar Point Pier. Also, a 2x4 was launched through the window of a pickup truck with this tornado. Fortunately, the occupant of the truck only suffered minor injuries. Heavy rainfall and flooding was also observed with Tropical Storm Claudette. Referring to slide 10, Claudette impacted the entire southeast region with heavy rainfall. Almost 10 inches of rain fell in Slidell, Louisiana, causing localized flooding and prompting many water rescues. In Alabama, flooding occurred along an area from Tuscaloosa to Birmingham to Fort Payne, in conjunction with the heaviest rainfall during the overnight hours of June 19th to 20th. Tuscaloosa Airport measured 8.16 inches of rain on June 19th, making it the wettest day ever on record. Search and rescue teams were also deployed in Alabama due to the flooding. Unfortunately, a total of 14 fatalities were reported in association with Tropical Storm Claudette. A 24-year-old man and his 3-year-old son were killed when a tree fell on their home. A 31-year-old man died in Birmingham after being swept away by floodwaters, and a 23-year-old woman drowned after driving her car into a flooded creek in Fort Payne. The greatest loss of life, however, was caused by hydroplaning that involved a 17-vehicle crash, 7 of which caught fire, in Butler County, Alabama. A total of 10 people died in the collisions. The Butler County coroner stated that the accident occurred at a downhill turn along the highway, which is notorious for hydroplaning incidents. That is my time with the history and impacts from Tropical Storm Claudette. I will now turn it over to Dan Collins for his latest updates and outlooks.
Thank you, Sandra. This is Dan Collins with the NOAA Climate Prediction Center. And as stated earlier, I'm going to be giving you an update on the current status of the El Nino Southern Oscillation, also known as ENSO, as well as the climate outlooks for temperature, precipitation, and drought for the next 3 months. I'm beginning with slide number 11. On the left is a map of sea surface temperature differences from long-term averages. You can see that sea surface temperatures across most of the central and eastern Pacific have been near average during the last 4 weeks. This indicates that ENSO is currently in a neutral state, as neither an El Nino with warmer than average SSTs or La Nina with cooler than average SSTs is occurring. Easterly trade winds that were stronger than average during the recent La Nina are now near average, Precipitation, however, over the Central Pacific Ocean remains above average, as it was for La Nina. The figure on the right of slide 11 shows the probabilities of El Nino, La Nina, and neutral conditions in the coming season. Neutral conditions are likely to continue through summer, as shown by the gray bars on the left-hand side of the figure. A second year with La Nina is likely to begin by the winter season. This is shown by the blue bars on the figure on the right of slide number 11. The probability of La Nina increases to greater than 60% by winter of this year. Now please move to slide number 12. The maps on slide number 12 show the climate outlook for August. On the left, probabilities of above and below normal temperatures for August are shown by shades of red, where above normal is most likely, and shades of blue, where below normal is most likely. Average temperatures for August are most likely to be above normal in southwestern areas of Alaska. Probability of above normal temperatures is particularly high for much of the West in the lower 48 states. Likely above normal temperatures extend across the northern plain states, the Great Lakes, and along the East Coast. Below normal temperatures are more likely for some areas of the southern plains and the lower Mississippi Valley. Areas that are shown in white have equal chances of above or below normal temperatures. In the map on the right, probabilities are shown for above and below normal precipitation for the next 3 months, in green for above normal, and brown where below normal is most likely. Below normal precipitation is more likely than above normal over eastern areas of the Pacific Northwest into western areas of the northern plains. Above normal precipitation is more likely in the month of August for the central Gulf Coast and to the north and east into the Ohio Valley and the Mid-Atlantic region. Above normal precipitation is also most likely to occur in northeastern areas of Alaska. I'm now moving to slide number 13 to take a look at the climate outlook for the next 3 months, August, September, and October. Once again, on the left, probabilities where above normal temperatures are likely are shown in shades of red, and probabilities where below normal is likely are shown in shades of blue. Above normal temperatures continue to be most likely across the West, as well as large area of the Midwest and the East. Equal chances of above and below normal temperatures are expected for eastern areas of the southern plains and much of the lower Mississippi Valley. In the map on the right, in shades of green and brown, are shown the probabilities of above normal and below normal precipitation for the next 3 months. Below normal is more likely than above normal over most of the West and across the northern plain states into the western Great Lakes. The eastern U.S. is more likely to experience above normal precipitation for the next 3 months. Areas of southern, eastern, and northern Alaska are also expected to experience above normal precipitation during this period. Finally, I am moving to slide number 14, which shows the U.S. drought outlook for the period ending in October of this year. Areas where drought is expected to persist are shown in brown. Areas where drought is expected to develop are shown in yellow, and areas where drought is expected to improve or be removed by the end of October are shown as gray for improvement, or green where removal is likely. You can see that drought over the western U.S. is expected mostly to persist over large areas, as well as across the northern plains. Development of drought is also likely to occur in parts of the Pacific Northwest, Montana, Wyoming, and parts of the Central Plains. Areas of the Southwest monsoon in Arizona and New Mexico and parts of western Texas are likely to improve, or drought is likely to be removed in some areas. Drought is also likely to improve or be removed in parts of the Midwest and the Northeast. You can also see on the bottom of slide 14 panels for Hawaii, where drought is expected to persist or develop, and Puerto Rico, where small areas of drought are likely to be removed. And this concludes my part of the call, and I'll turn it back over to John.
All right, thanks, Dan. We will now take specific questions from the call participants. Please be sure to identify who you would like to answer the question if possible. Michelle, could you please remind the call participants how they can ask a question and then queue up the first question?
Yes, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star one on your phone and make sure you're unmuted. Thank you. Our first question comes from Brian Sullivan with Bloomberg News. Your line is open.
Thank you. My question has to do with the severity of the drought in the West. As you don't see any improvement in the offing, how severe do you think things are going to get, particularly California and that area? And the second question is, how does this affect the wildfire risk and outlook?
This is Dan Collins with the Climate Prediction Center. I guess I'll try to take this. Well, as you know, that the drought is actually already, of course, severe over a larger area of the West. And the outlook is for some of the remaining areas in the Northwest to worsen. I don't know. We don't actually predict how severe, you know, the drought could exactly get in those areas where it's already quite severe. It is bad enough, I guess, to know that it'll persist in those conditions. In the monsoon region, there should be relief, and that's despite the fact that we're not really expecting above normal monsoon. But the monsoon season brings a large part of the seasonal rainfall or the annual rainfall to that region, and so parts of that area should see some relief. But in other areas, seasonal rainfall is not enough, especially since the tilt is towards likely below normal rainfall.
And the prospects for wildfire?
The prospects for wildfire. I don't specifically have the outlook for wildfire. As you know, of course, the drought will increase chances of wildfire in the West.
Yes. This is John Bateman. I was going to say you're also welcome to reach out to me, and I can connect with someone who might have that wildfire outlook for you if you'd like. Just you can email me with that.
Sure. Thanks, John.
Our next question comes from Matt Renda with the Courthouse News Service. Your line is open.
Hi. Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
We can hear you.
Okay. Yeah, my question is, and, you know, I'm not sure to the extent that you can get in to it on this call, but I'm just wondering about climate change and global warming and, you know, if the agencies are, you know, trying to quantify the effect that, you know, climate change may have on these above normal temperatures and the drought outlook that you're seeing specifically in the American West.
Hi, this is Ira Sanchez-Lugo, and I want to say yes. Typically, it takes quite some time to gather all the data to have a better understanding on how much climate change has an impact on some of these extreme events. I do know that BAMS, the State of the Climate, with several scientists from NCI and others, do put out a yearly report where they look at certain events across the U.S., and they've done an extensive analysis to determine how much climate change influenced those type of events. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And so that usually happens then more on an annual rather than like a monthly basis.
It takes a lot of time because they do have to run scenarios and whatnot. So it might take, you know, a couple of months. I won't say yearly thing, but it might take a few months. And then they write also a report, an annual report that goes into BAMS. So it might be released
a little
bit earlier, but the annual report that gets through this, it goes through a peer review process. That takes longer.
Okay. All right. Very good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Our next question comes from Christina Larson with the Associated Press. Your line is open, ma'am.
Hi. Thanks for this briefing. My questions are for Ahira. It's really just clarification of your very informative presentation. First thing I just wanted to double check is I believe that you said that both North America and Africa last month experienced hottest average land June temperatures on record. And I was just looking at the chart as part of the briefing, and the chart was for the contiguous U.S. So I wanted to double check whether I should say the contiguous U.S. or North America or either experienced the hottest average land temperatures in June. The other thing I just wanted to check to make sure that I'm stating accurately is looking at one of the maps here. Several states are in this darkest red color, which is record warmest temperature. Is that record warmest average land temperature in June or record warmest temperature? Do I need to include land? I'm just making sure I understand exactly what that means. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. So when I was stating like the global land only, that's to make sure that people don't also think that I'm including the ocean. So here's all the individual like continents and hemisphere that did have the record warm June temperature departure. So the global land was one. The northern hemisphere land, doesn't include the oceans, had the warmest June on record. And then looking at continents, North America had its warmest June on record as well, and that's only land as well. Africa had its warmest land temperature, and the contiguous U.S. also had its warmest June on record. And those the states that have the dark that are shaded in the dark red, those mean that they had their warmest June temperature on record. And because they're land, I don't think you need to say land for that because. It is.
Okay. And did you just say that Africa, North America, you said it had its warmest June on record, and I think you said that Africa had its warmest land temperature. Do I need the land there or
no, you don't need
not?
To put land. I'm just making sure that people understand that no ocean areas were included in that analysis, so it's just the land for Africa.
Okay. Thank you.
Sorry for the confusion.
No problem. I'm just double-checking. Thank you.
Our next question comes from John Boyer with the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Your line is open, sir.
Hi. Thanks for doing this. Good morning. I wanted to get one quick clarification from Ira, and I had a question for Dan as well. I could start with a question for Ira with slide 3 on the year-to-date global temperatures. You mentioned a 95% confidence interval. What were those rankings involved? Was it 95% confidence between 6th and 10th?
6th and 7th currently, and that's using data from June 2021, yes.
Okay, thank you. Is there a similar analysis or ranking just for the contiguous U.S. along those lines?
I don't think it's out there right now. I think they do that later in the year.
All right, I appreciate it. And then with Dan, I was going to ask about slide 13 with the precipitation outlook, August, September, October. Looking particularly at the Mid-Atlantic and Eastern Seaboard, seeing that enhanced chance of above-normal precipitation. Is that reflecting a signal of the active tropical outlook, or what factors into those probabilities we see there?
I see. Well, not especially for the Mid-Atlantic would it be largely connected to the tropical outlook. The activity in the tropics does play a role, of course, in the Gulf Coast and parts of the Southeast. And to a lesser extent, you know, as you know, precipitation can extend up into the Mid-Atlantic from the tropics. But this outlook is largely based on the dynamical model forecast. It is, in some
sense pretty similar to the kind of circulation pattern that we've been seeing recently, where the eastern U.S. has generally had more precipitation, but it's a bit further north and east over the Mid-Atlantic. So I would generally refer to it as a seasonal precipitation more than an expectation of tropical systems, perhaps to some extent the contribution of the remnants of tropical systems, which can create precipitation over the region. So to some extent.
I appreciate it. Thanks to you both.
Our next question comes from Zach Coleman with Politico. Your line is open. Thank you, sir.
Hi, thanks. I just wanted to get some clarification from Mahira on the death tolls from the Pacific Northwest heat wave. I think you said hundreds of, or maybe more than 100 people died or were hospitalized. Do you have like a breakdown of those figures and exactly where they come from? I'm not sure whether NOAA itself tallies that sort of thing, but that clarification would help.
Yes, so that is preliminary information, and that I did say over 100 because I know there were over 100 for the Western Canada and for the U.S. Looking at the billion-dollar disaster, I know that some of that information does get included, but again, it takes some time to gather all the information. Does that make sense? So it might take a few months for us to have the total final the total number of fatalities and hospitalizations.
Okay, so that's a lump sum of that's all inclusive. That's hospitals and hospitalizations and fatalities over 100.
Yes.
Okay. And is there like any defined way in which we look at heat related deaths? I mean, like how you know, because there's other ways of, you know, it may be the straw on the camel's back that leads to other underlying conditions causing deaths. I mean, is there any way in which we have a clear definition?
What I think is that, you know, when people are exposed to extreme heat, the most vulnerable will be the elderly, the kids, the people that are working outdoors, and those that have pre-existing conditions. Now, I don't think they do categorization. This is the amount of people of elderly that die. I don't know if we will have that information, but I think we will have at least some idea of how many people died related to the heat or were hospitalized. But again, it might take some time.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
We have no other questions. I'd like to turn the conference back over to Mr. John Bateman.
All right. Thanks, Michelle. If there are no further questions, I will wrap up the call. First of all, I'd like to thank all of our speakers for their time and to everyone else for participating in this conference call. I will end by reminding you to mark your calendar for a couple of upcoming events. The release of the July 2021 U.S. Climate Report is scheduled for August 9th. And the release for the July 2021 Global Climate Report is scheduled for August 13th. Lastly, an audio file of this call will be posted on the NOAA.gov Media Advisory site later this afternoon. If you have any further informational needs, please don't hesitate to email me at, and I will spell it, nesdis.pa@noaa.gov. That's nesdis.pa@noaa.gov. My contact information is also available at the top of the media advisory. Thank you.
That concludes today's conference. All participants may disconnect. Speakers, please stand by.